The Walking Dead Talk Through, Episode 71, Time for After Feedback.
Welcome to The Walking Dead Talk Through, a fan podcast dedicated to The Walking Dead on AMC. Join us each week as we discuss the characters, story developments, and theories of The Walking Dead. Send in your thoughts about each episode by calling 304-837-2278 or by visiting our feedback page at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And now, here's your hosts.
All right, so we are back to discuss your feedback from Time for After, which is Season 8, Episode 7. And with me again, I have Rima and Kristen. And you might as well give a little info about your podcast again. Short version.
Yeah, I'm always happy to do that. So I co-host a podcast for the Netflix series Stranger Things. You may have heard of it. Our podcast is called Strange Indeed. I co-host with my friend Sean, and you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify.
And I'm Kristen, and I co-host a podcast called Game of Microphones, which is a podcast about Game of Thrones. Right now we're doing a rewatch where if you have seen the entire series up to season 7, episode 7, we are going back and watching the episode one by one with the context of the series as a whole. So you can come and find me and Duncan every week talking about Game of Thrones like a bunch of nerds, and we love it.
Oh, we love it. We're all nerds.
All right. So speaking of feedback, let's get into it.
We can talk about it.
We're done talking. Time to listen.
All right. First is PB and Zane, Rena. Oh my God. I'm surprised it took me this long to fumble your name. Rima.
Everyone does.
Why don't you give first?
Okay. So feedback from PB and Zane. Love the name, by the way. You know, I just don't see the purpose of the garbage people. They don't really add anything except irritation to the show. Jada's taking pictures of Rick in his poo-poo undies. Can't get that picture out of my head. Bye-bye to that crush. I can't believe Eugene says he is Negan the way he did. I was holding out hope that he was still on Rick's side. Eugene, you're an ass. Hope you have your shittin' pants on. I don't know the name of the girl that semi-chewed Eugene out, but I liked it. Father Gabriel got sick from the innards? Okay. Guess they have to change that up for some reason. I'm sure someday we will find out why. I'm so glad Michonne didn't go along with Daryl.
Is it Tanya, that Negan wife that was in wanting her boombox? I think that's her name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she sounds like she hates Eugene.
Well, I could understand why.
Good reason.
Yeah. With good reason. They were trying to offer everyone, you know, a way out by poisoning Negan a long time ago, and he didn't do it. Gave it to Sasha instead.
Yeah, but didn't he made two pills, right?
He did. So there's still one pill somewhere, because I don't think he gave both to Sasha. I think he only gave her one.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yep, I don't remember how many he gave her.
Malika Tazi says, I only had an opportunity to watch it once. I must admit it held my interest, though I'm not sure how I actually feel about it. You and me both, sister. I'm really hoping the 90-minute mid-season finale will give us something good, even though it may be laced with a bunch more of our people biting the dust. Maybe Terrell, a baby, Tara, a few others.
Did you say maybe Terrell?
I said Tara.
No, I think you said maybe Terrell, a baby, Tara, and a few others. Did you hear that, Rima?
Well, it's possible.
I don't know that I'm not sure what I heard. I'm giving you an out, Kristen.
It doesn't matter.
I got your back.
It doesn't matter.
You know what? Every single time I used to get excited about the mid-season 90-minute finales, and now I'm just like, oh, good, 10 more minutes of episode for 20 more minutes of commercials.
Yeah,
I've pretty much become jaded with the 90-minute episodes.
At least mm-hmm. there hasn't been so many long episodes this season as there was last season. It just was excessive last season.
They overdid it. Yeah.
The best 90-minute episode that I saw the entire series, I think, was the Cheesemaker episode.
Oh.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny. I didn't care for that episode when it was first on. Now, I want to explain before you react. It had a lot to do with the fact that it came right after Glenn and the dumpster and the fact that Rick was stranded in the RV. That's what I was focusing on. That's what I wanted to see. And when I didn't, I was kind of miffed. Now, when I saw it later, you know, binge watching it, I was able to appreciate the episode a lot more. And, you know, I think it's, you know, one of the top 10 of the show, but, you know, I didn't appreciate it all that much when it first came out.
Yeah, it's a beautiful episode. It's definitely one of my favorites. And I kind of agree with you, Brian. It was kind of up there with, you know, like you said, where we left off in the previous episode. And then all of a sudden we get this. And I think initially, whenever I realized watching that episode that we weren't going to get an answer as to what was going on or what happened, I was initially upset, but then as you get into the episode, as I continue to watch, I just got so swept in the beauty of that episode and the acting and everything that happened that it made me forget pretty quickly. And also, I happened to be at Walker Stalker Atlanta that year that they have a live viewing of the episode that everyone's invited to at the where they have Walker Stalker at the convention center. So I was watching with like thousands of other Walking Dead fans, and that was just in a moment in of itself to be able to do that and experience that. So that helped as well.
Yeah. I and you ladies both know that I have not been able to go to one yet. And this is a source of frustration every time it's brought up.
It'll happen.
The funny thing is, like, in the past, I used to go to cons all the time, and suddenly I've hit a point in my life where it seems like I have to have an act of God to be able to go. So I don't know. Hopefully this coming year I will make it to one. It's like my, big goal this year to meet as many of my new friends as possible. And of course, that includes both of you.
Yeah, I recommend it. It's definitely a lot of fun. And, you know, it's just something you have to put on your list, make it a goal, and then make it happen.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Okay. Next is feedback from Cheryl. And again, Cheryl was a very big help this week by kind of contributing, helping out, collect all the feedback. So again, thank you, Cheryl. She says, I still don't understand how Negan knew that the Walker guts and innards are diseased, and Rick and the survivors have never had any issues with this. It's just crazy that this has never been a problem until now. Is this something new Gimple thought of? Does make sense that they would get more disease the longer the walkers are around. I kind of don't believe that is what is really wrong with Father Gabriel. Also, where in the heck did Morgan come from? That's a good question, I gotta say, because he came out of nowhere. I thought he was already, like, you know, walking the earth. Last we saw him, he left, said he had to leave, and now he's back with the survivors being a sniper. WTH, and I totally agree. I did not expect him to be one of the snipers. I was happy that he was, because, you know, he didn't, you know, totally go off to the funny farm, but I was very surprised that he was. What about you two? What do you think?
I had the same thoughts. When, you know, we see Morgan up there as a sniper, I also wondered, now, how did he get there? I guess there's a lot of things that happen off screen that we don't get to see, or that we're not privy to, and we just have to, accept it. And, you know, I'm usually okay with that, but I thought that was a little bit of a gap. You know, like, we didn't see Rosita, how she goes from being her rogue self, how she was going out and doing the things that she was doing in the previous season that ticked me off every time she did it. Like, you know, when Daryl chose to go rogue and all of a sudden she's a team player and she's like, I'm team Rick Grimes, which I'm, you know, or I believe in Rick Grimes. I'm totally for that. And I'm happy if she's turned that, but we don't see that. We just see her from, you know, this chip on her shoulder and bad attitude to all of a sudden now she's believing in the plan and believing what's happening. And so I guess this is something that we're having to see or not see, I should say, that that's happened. I was confused by that as well. I thought the same thing. I thought, where the heck did Morgan come from? What did I miss?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it seemed to come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Do you think that there's a possibility that we've been watching the season out of order?
I had thought of that because one thing that I noticed, and I'm going to go back and look at one of the previous episodes here.
You know, sometimes they film out of order, I know, to throw people off for spoilers, like people who spy on the set and take pictures and report back because they think that, oh, they're filming this episode. It must be episode one. They're filming this. That must mean these are events from episode two. They have been known to film out of order to try to throw people off. So I wonder if that's kind of jacked things up a little bit in the in the way that they do things and how that's maybe coming across. But that's interesting.
I thought in the first episode, I'm probably totally wrong, but it just felt to me like the shooting, the four shots and, you know, counting down from 10 and all that other stuff. Mm-hmm. I just felt to me like that was their end game. Almost, or towards the end, you know, I don't know. It just felt like that was maybe something that we were seeing later in All Out War. And maybe we're seeing, I don't know. And maybe we're seeing more. We saw Morgan in the woods before with Jesus, but maybe that happened at a different time when they were getting, you know, the guns and stuff together before that or something. I have no idea how it would fit together, but I'm just wondering if as I was saying it, I don't even know how it would even go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's probably wrong, but it's the only way I can figure out how Morgan goes from, you know, fighting Jesus to the death to, well, I'm with you, Daryl and Tara. I'll be up there with my gun that I just got.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I had a stick and a different gun when you last saw me.
And he just shows up and volunteers to be a sniper at the Savior compound, at the sanctuary. And there was just something missing there. So
do you think, I wrote down this question. I'm wondering what you think. Do you think that, the snipers knew that Daryl and Tara were calling an audible?
Mm.
And if they knew that they had been calling an audible, would they have been with them the way that they were? Or maybe they would have said, no, you know what? Rick didn't clear this, or this isn't a part of the plan, then we're not a part of it. But Daryl is so high ranking that maybe they didn't question it.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I do, because I don't know about the snipers, but Morgan seemed to understand that they were kind of going rogue. So, you know, that was my take.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I will mention, I was looking while you were talking. The description for episode 5, it sounds like they took part of it and it actually became this episode. I don't know, but the description for that, and I can see how that was partially descriptive, but this is what it says. With war raging all around him, we get a close look at Negan and the lives of the Saviors during the conflict through a familiar set of eyes. Now, it's that familiar set of eyes. We certainly got more, you know, of Eugene's set of eyes than we did Gabriel in that episode. You know, so when I was thinking about it, I thought maybe they switched the descriptions around. I don't really feel that now after reading it, but it certainly did seem similar to what we got this episode.
Yeah. Some things just aren't fitting, and that's unsatisfactory. I hate plot holes.
It does seem like there is the potential that things got kind of shifted around. I mean, one thing I've noticed is how the last three episodes have been kind of shared writing, and I'd have to go back and look. Let me see. I can check that really quick. Oh, okay. No, it wasn't the last one. Okay. Yeah. So, the last two episodes were partially written by Coy Reed. So I wonder if they took, you know, part of his episode six and part of his episode seven and, or, you know, part of episode six and part of episode seven were mashed together and kind of mixed around, you know, and who knows? It's hard to say, but it kind of does seem like things got kind of mixed around.
The plane will land next week.
I still have faith. I mean, I know this episode was, you know, not one of my favorites, and, you know, but I still have faith that things are going to somehow come about, you know, the next episode for the finale. This one was just, for me, a little bit of a stinker and not what I would have wanted it to be. I think it could have been done better. Now, how could it have done better? I have no idea. I'm not a writer. I'm not the creative type. So I certainly couldn't tell them how to do it better. I just think for me, it just fell short as far as some of the storytelling. And like you mentioned earlier, some of the writing of the characters was not really true to the characters. And I hope that we're just not like sacrificing too much of that for this. So
that's one thing too.
Agreed.
That's one thing too that I wanted to mention, since, you know, Rima, how many Walker Stalker cons have you been to at this point? Quite a few, right?
I honestly could try to go back and count for you, but it would take too long.
Many. Yeah.
Many.
And you, Kristen?
One.
Oh, just the one. Oh,
just,
okay.
Just one.
Of course, the one that I wasn't at, that I was not able to attend, you got so to go to. I was so mad.
I was so sad. I missed you so much that weekend when Jason's like, hey, I'm FaceTiming her. I'm like, yes.
Yes, I know. I was in tears. I was like, oh my God, I wanted to be there so bad. Yes. I hated that.
Are you, either of you going to the one that's this coming weekend in New Jersey?
No,
I'm done traveling this year.
Yeah. The point I was going to make about that is that's one thing that the Walker Stalker Con has never had, that if they did, that would totally entice me to go, you know, beyond saying hello to my friends. And that is that they never have the writers. Like, that was one thing I did my sort of brush with greatness, because you guys know that I sold a Star Trek story long ago. Mm-hmm. And yep. 25 years ago, in 1992, I went to a con in Dearborn, Michigan, and they had a, like, how to write for Star Trek seminar with Ronald D. Moore, who, of course, you know, he's best known now for being the creator of the reboot of the Battlestar Galactica, and he's also Outlander now he's involved with. And Brannon Braga, who was, you know, showrunner for Voyager, I believe, and Enterprise, and he's, you know,
love Voyager.
He's now on the Orville. He's involved with that. I think he's like the number two on that. You know, and those guys have written countless episodes and movies. You know, I think they wrote Generations and First Contact. And I got to like attend a seminar and actually talk to those guys like in person, like 2 feet away from them kind of thing. And that was amazing. And that's the one thing I wish that they would get the writers out. And I don't know why they don't ever attend the cons.
Well, and okay, so I'm not going to, I do not work for Walker Stalker or FanFest that run them, and I'm certainly not going to, you know, jump on that bandwagon and act like they're the greatest thing ever. They're pretty awesome, but, you know, that there are some things that you can find fault with. I don't know that they haven't. I'll say this. I know that they invite many, many people that we don't know about. It's you know, people don't always say yes. Like Greg Nicotero goes to a lot of them.
Right.
And although he's not a writer, he is an executive producer and directs a lot of the episodes, especially like the finales and the premieres. And he's at many of them. But he does have a full load because he also executive produces Fear. But he is at a lot of them. And Robert Kirkman does normally attend the cruise, the Walker Stalker cruise that they have. And he, you know, has, you know, helped contribute to writing, and also he is the creator.
Well, yeah.
But I don't know that it's so much that they don't invite them. I think it's they just don't do them. They say no.
Yeah, I wonder why they say no.
I don't know the answer to that, but I will say that I do know that they make a lot of effort to get as many people as possible. And it's not just the actors in front that we see, but also like writers and people that are involved. I've thought the same thing as well. I think it would be great to see the writers and kind of pick their brains and, you know, learn their processes and things. Cause I'm a behind the scenes kind of nerd about those things. I don't want to just see what's in front of me. I like to know how it works. And how that production works. So I would find it interesting. And maybe they don't feel it would be enough of a draw. Maybe they don't feel enough of the crowd. You know, JDM and Norman Reedus certainly do bring a crowd.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. To those cons. And maybe if it was, you know, some of the writers, I mean, everybody pretty much knows Gimple, you know, as like the showrunner, main writer, but they don't always pay that much attention to, you know, some of the other writers on the show. Some aren't as nerded out.
Yeah,
like some of us to that. So it could go either way. So just in defense of the folks at Walker Stalker, I don't know that it's so much that they don't try. I think it's that they say no.
Yeah, and it wasn't a criticism of Walker Stalker Con. Mm-hmm. It was more of a like, writers, why don't you do this? You know, and, mm-hmm. and reach out like you know, I'm doing the Star Trek Discovery podcast now, and the writers from that show have gone to cons of, you know, they've been to a few now. So, you know, and, you know, it's not like everybody's going to criticize them. You know, it's, and I'll also say that he hasn't done one in a long time, but, Jason, was able back, you know, a few seasons back, able to, interview, you know, several of the writers and producers on the show, and those mm-hmm. are really good interviews. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I'm a writer geek, so you know, I still have this like thought of like, man, if I could have gone back and intercepted me in, you know, 20 some odd years ago and said, hey Brian, you really should go to LA and see if you can make your, you know, turn yourself into a TV writer. That's like my one single regret that I have, that I didn't try, you know.
It's never too late.
Yeah, well.
Never say never.
Never say never, but, you know, it would, unfortunately, if I did that, I would lose out of a very, you know, successful income that I have. So it would be hard to kind of turn my back on that.
I agree. It's difficult. It's what my kiddo's trying to do right now, be a TV writer.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Well, we should move on. So next is from Tilly. Rima, you want to take that?
Yeah. So Tilly Creary says, I really do love the show and the universe as a whole. The only thing that I find super frustrating is when characters on any show make stupid decisions. Yes, I know that it only happens to drive the story forward, but ugh, Daryl should have just stuck to the damn plan. Sure, I wanted to see what would happen if the walkers got into the sanctuary. I'm all for a good old-fashioned zombie shooting gallery, but of course, now the saviors are loose and all hell is going to break loose, which means we'll never get to know if Rick's master plan would have worked. Side note, it probably wouldn't have, but damn it, we just watched 7 episodes of Master Plan setup, and now that's all shot to hell, literally. But whatever, I still love this show. I only get this passionate about shows I love, so they must be doing something right. Otherwise, I would have quit way back in season 2. At this point, they have me until the fat lady sings. Ha ha. Also, Eugene. OMG, I want to like him. I really do. I want to believe that deep, deep way deep down, he's a good person who is capable of making good decisions. But damn, the only truth about him is what he's told us from the first time he got caught. He's a coward who will only do what's best for himself. And as of this episode, I truly believe that he's not ever going to choose Rick's side over Negan. So yeah, F that guy. Mm-hmm. And the Heapsters, I hate those guys too, mostly because they're annoying, but also because at the end of the day, I don't know what purpose they serve in the story except to fill runtime and show weirdly modified zombies. That's it. If there were no Heapsters, the story would move along unchanged from what we already have. If only they could disappear from the plot like the Oceanside people did, that would make me happy. And yes, even after all this ranting, I love this show. They had me at zombie apocalypse. I should also mention as a caveat to my previous comment, I'm a Walking Dead comic book reader as well and have been rereading the entire series. It's always interesting to see the changes and similarities between the show and the comic.
Yeah, that it is. And, you know, I don't know how different All Out War is from the comic. It sounds like it's been quite a bit different, but I don't know.
Yeah, what little I do know, it does seem to be different. But I don't know that much.
I know nothing.
Jon Snow.
I am.
But Tilly, I stupid decisions indeed. Yeah, you know, in fact, this has been an issue that, you know, we've seen. And, you know, I had that listed in you know, my notes. And that is that this show tends to have a lot of times where the characters kind of act a certain way to move the plot in a certain direction instead of the plot moving in ways because of the characters, you know? And I think when shows move where the plot moves because of the way the characters are, like the characters are acting in character, causing certain situations that advance the plot, that turns out for, you know, much better story writing than when you see characters acting out of character to, you know, cause the story to go a certain way because they're driving the plot, you know. And we're seeing this now, and we've seen this, you know, quite a few times with the show, and I don't like it. I wish that characters would be more consistent and drive the plot and not actions driving the plot.
Okay. Dieta Patterson says, Daryl and Tara are the new dynamic duo, not understanding why they didn't want to wait for Rick and stick with the plan. Okay, so they run the garbage truck into the sanctuary and let the walkers in. Did they forget that they had guns? There were no guarantees that walkers were going to kill the saviors or Negan. Or maybe they were hoping for them to run out of bullets or something and they had a second floor to hide and get away from the dead. Not a good thought out plan. Daryl and Tara, .. and Morgan. Why can't everybody just stick to the plan instead of jumping the gun? Messing up now, somebody is most likely going to die. Lots of frowny faces.
What?
What's wrong with Gabriel? That's all I have time to boast.
Indeed.
What do you mean Daryl and Tara are the new dynamic duo?
I think she's kind of liking what Daryl and Tara are doing, I guess.
Oh, no. Please tell me that's that's sarcasm.
Yeah. So let's have that little sarcasm font.
Probably.
There needs to be a sarcasm font.
It does. It really does.
Yeah. Yeah. That must have been what she meant because, you know, seeing what she said after that, that definitely seems to be, she definitely seems to be questioning, their actions, which, you know, it's true. They just left it alone. I think everything would have fallen right into plan. And instead we have a nice, poop casserole coming. So.
But, you know, and this is not to defend Daryl and Tara by any means, because I think that they were wrong for their actions. But do you think that sometimes they feel like we do sometimes, that sometimes Rick's plans just don't turn out so well? That it seems like a lot of the time when we see Rick has come up with a plan, it somehow ended up in a disaster or something, and they're willing, they just want to take it into their own hands, that they feel they can do better. Do you think that just now occurred to me? But I mean, I hope that's not it, but do you think that's where they're going with that?
I think there's a lot of parts of the plan that weren't planned, like, you know, and this didn't come up in this episode, but certainly in last episode, why didn't they figure out what they were going to do with prisoners of war? Like, were they going to, was the plan going to be that they were going to take no prisoners?
Right.
Or were they going to do essentially what Jesus did? Because, you know, Jesus wants to save people. Even when they're saviors. That's one of my new sound effects that I have to find a chance to use in every episode because I love it. I've been looking for a Jesus sound effect for 3 seasons. I
finally found one. You've got one.
Yep. Anyway, you know, this is that whole thing should have been something that had been worked out. And the same goes for what happens after. And to me, Daryl's actions here kind of fit into that happens after, but kind of don't, because they had a plan. The plan was they were going to go to the saviors, you know, go to the sanctuary in, you know, 2 days, which I guess is a day now, and, you know, try to get them to stand down. And that has been completely ruined. So, yeah.
I mean, it sounded like a good plan when we finally got to hear, you know, what that plan was. It was like, oh, well, that actually makes sense. And I understand that. And, you know, for them to throw a wrench in it was mind boggling. But I wonder if maybe they're just frustrated, you know, with maybe how other plans have, you know, not come to fruition, I guess.
Yeah.
I see what you're saying. That's a good question. The only thing is that Michonne's right. The plan was working. Like, it was working beautifully. It just made no sense that they just torched it.
Yeah.
Oh, and I totally agree. I certainly do not defend their actions, and I don't agree with it. I'm just trying to make it make sense in my brain. Like, why did you do that? Is this why you did that? I feel like and I know we don't always get that explanation. We don't always get to know those things, but I still want to know. And that's the only, you know, it's just one thing that came up, like, to try to see it from their point of view, what drove them. You know, besides just the fact that Daryl wants vengeance for what he went through, that he's willing to sacrifice the plan and everything that they've done. You know, obviously you can tell it's taken some time for this plan to come at this point where they were, and he's willing to just throw a wrench in that and have it all come tumbling down and into a plan that he just threw together at the last minute. Like, we're just going to do this. We don't really have a plan, but this is what we're going to do. And I just feel it was so reckless. There's just too many variables, you know, in his plan or lack of plan that, I'm just trying to see where in the world they were going with it and why they decided to act as they did. And that's the only thing I can think in my brain that makes sense. And I know things don't always make sense, and I do accept that most of the time, but it just, like you were mentioning, it's so out of character. I feel for them, I just need a reason why.
Yeah. Especially for two characters that have been such team players in the past. And it's weird to see Tara. Like, Tara lost her whole family in the very beginning, and she lost her girlfriend now. And she's acting like she's the only person to lose someone close to her in the zombie apocalypse. And I'm like, you know, everybody's lost everybody, right?
Pretty much everyone has lost somebody, or almost everyone. Look at Maggie, for crying out loud.
Oh, gee.
Yeah.
She's a branch now. She's not even a tree anymore. It's so sad.
Anytime you think you've got it bad, you need to look at Maggie and just shut up.
And yet, who is one of the strongest people on, you know, in the story is Maggie. She just, when she's on screen, I am just so impressed with her character. She's so strong and so determined. And, you know, I've really come to admire Maggie as a character.
Yeah. Well, you know, you either learn from your circumstances and you deal with them, or you let them define you, you know? Mm-hmm. So you just have to decide which one you're going to be.
Exactly. And you're right. It's a decision.
All right. Well, our last bit of feedback is from Claire, and it is predictions for the mid-season finale. Her prediction for the mid-season finale is that Tara or Eugene will die. Or maybe that's just my hope. I don't want to lose anyone else, but would shed zero tears for either of them. I can certainly understand not shedding any tears for Eugene at this point, because you know, he's kind of on my poop list, so to speak. But he's on my shit list. Okay, so Tara, I think I said from a previous episode, Tara was annoying until she wasn't annoying anymore, until she was annoying again.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Perfect.
All right. Well, it's time for our other points. So, Rima, why don't you start?
Well, one of my first points, I think we've covered a lot of things really, really well, so I don't have too much, but I really enjoyed there at the end of the episode when Rick was trying to reach the snipers at the sanctuary. He got that walkie-talkie from the dead sniper after he took out those walkers. I thought that was kind of a cool callback to season one with Rick and Morgan and the walkie-talkies. Mm-hmm. I really liked that. I don't know if that's specifically what they were going for. I do know that they said that there were a few things during the season that were callbacks for me. That was one of them, just personally anyway, that I really liked. Whenever he's like, this is Rick Grimes, you know, and that awesome voice that only he can do. So I really like that. Sorry, go ahead.
Also, Morgan, you know, being a sniper kind of reminds me of the pilot episode where, you know, he's, you know, trying to pick off walkers, you know, most especially his now, you know, his deceased wife, and he couldn't end up doing it. So, you know, here he was kind of being in that same kind of, position again with a similar gun too.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Very good point.
He's come a long way, baby.
Came a long way. And I think back around again. Poor Morgan. I just don't know where we're going with him and where he's going to end up.
He has he's been through a lot, and you know, much like, you know, we talk about Morgan and his breaks from sanity, but he's certainly not alone in that, because Rick's had his own breaks from sanity from time to time.
Most definitely. Yeah, most definitely. Yeah, you can't really fault him for it. I mean, people have their own thresholds of what they can handle and what takes them to the point. And you can just only hope that they can come back around again, surround themselves with people that can help bring them back around. You know, he was in one bad place when he met the cheesemaker, you know, and look what happened there. And then, you know, he's been through some more things, and he's kind of went back, you know, to how he was before he ran into Eastman. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see where he goes from here. But
he's going to Texas.
Some form. Yeah. So I'm interested to see. I hope whatever they do it well. Whatever Morgan, his exit, I'm guessing, out of the season sometime, serves him well. He's such a beloved character. I've been a fan of Morgan since the pilot, and I was definitely one of those people shouting from the rooftops from the time that we left Morgan when Rick moved on. Rick and the group moved on, and we didn't see Morgan till the time he started popping up. Remember at the end of the episodes, you would see, you know, little snippets.
Through the codas.
you know, and I was that one person as well with many others that were, where's Morgan? Where's Morgan? We want more Morgan. And, you know, he was straight up one of my favorite characters right off. And I want him to serve the character well. So.
Agreed.
Yeah. Our very first episode of The Walking Dead talk through was for No Sanctuary. And I just remember us making a big thing about, look who it's Morgan.
Yeah, like when he removed, like when you saw him, but you didn't know for sure it was him. Like I felt like I was calling him, like, that's Morgan, that's Morgan, I know it is. And then when they finally, like, he pulled down his little his handkerchief, whatever it was that was covering his face, and it was confirmed that it was Morgan. I think I just cried and cried like a baby. That whole time I was so happy that they were bringing him back. It just really, you know, I think brought things kind of full circle, and we got to see that. Beautiful, beautiful. So my other point, I think we've talked a lot about, was just, and I mentioned earlier about Eugene just really kind of sticking to his character. I think we've talked about that a lot. And you know how now I feel I've really seen the true Eugene can't come out. Totally. If there was any doubt, you know, I feel that it was closed in this episode as to who he really is and what he's willing to do for himself.
What side he's on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So those are my points.
All right, Kristen, what you got?
Well, I agree with Rima that we've talked about Eugene enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. You know, I had just two little things and then one thing.
Wait a minute. Eugene has something to say.
Are you serious?
Yeah, dude, I've had enough of you.
Yep.
First of all, did anybody get like a real 70s vibe throughout this episode? Just like the way it was shot? I don't know. It was like, it was almost like a bad martial arts movie at times where they during the semi sequence with Daryl going into the sanctuary where they closed in on his face in this weird like close-up zoom that they did where I said, oh, this is so strange. And then they like zoomed in on the shot of the cinder block going it on the gas pedal. And there was like this weird like Stranger Things type of music going on in the background. And I don't know. There was so much of this episode where I thought, you know, this has a very retro vibe to the whole thing. Like it looked like there was even like a filter on it. I don't know. It was, it was definitely directed differently from other episodes, like the bulk of other episodes, just for me.
Yeah. I don't know that I made the connection with it being like, I see where your point is and I agree with that, but I do remember thinking as I'm watching it, that it was just different. Like, why did they choose that shot? Why did they choose it to do this camera angle? Or, you know, I found myself questioning more this episode than a few others, why it was shot the way that it was and some of the different either camera angles or the specific shots. I can only hope that there was a point to it, or they're just, that's the artistic flair coming out with the director, you know, his vision, you know, maybe. So I don't know, but I do. Yeah, I agree. I thought something a little bit different about this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And it had one of the things that I can't stand, not all the way through, but in many scenes, not light enough. Like the contrast was, not what it should have been. And I've seen this problem happen. I don't know how many times on this show, particularly since season 5, where it just, the lighting's off. And if you aren't watching it on like, the best, screen, it's a little hard to see, you know, things. And you know, particularly the scenes in the sanctuary itself, it was hard to see things from time to time.
Yeah, I do like that tone though. When they're in the sanctuary, it's very oppressive, dark. You kind of feel closed in. So I don't know,
a prison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah,
that is appropriate. Yep.
Yeah.
But you know what? The Stranger Things music in my notes that I heard, because it did, it reminded me of something out of Stranger Things. It was when the drone, the kite drone, was being made, and he was going up to the roof to set it off or whatever. It was just a very different kind of like that electronic type of music. Yes. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I heard technical.
It. Yeah, I heard it too, actually.
Yep.
Yeah.
Spot on.
Yeah.
But, and then the other little thing was in the very beginning of the episode was when, you know, Rick comes out. You know, Rick's been in that sweat box for a while. And I just started thinking, you know, he doesn't really get a lot of time to rest. And the Heapsters are giving him like this time to kind of recharge his very tired body. So, and then he comes out and he's like, bam, bam, ninja, Judy chop, let's go. And right. And you're just like, right, dude. Well, you know, Heapsters, you should have done this to him when he first got there because he was tired. Now he slept. he's ready to go, even in his underpants. So
I just that reminds me, it was something I think was it PB and Zane said about poo-poo on the East? Did Rick have poo-poo in his pants?
No, she was being mean.
No.
I got many good glances of him in his underpants and I didn't catch anything like that at all. He might have been a little sweaty, but I did not see anything like that. So let's not talk about Rick that way.
Rick Grimes names.
Yeah,
that's our Rick.
We don't need to see that. So
we don't need to get into that. I mean, really, we're just not going to go there.
Yeah.
The biggest note I had, though, the biggest one, and I feel like, maybe I don't understand what happened. Maybe it's me. I don't know. But Eugene was really upset at the end of this episode. Mr. I take one shot of wine to sleep at night. Okay. Ugh. One shot of wine is like nothing. nothing. Especially if you're doing it every night. You got to up it, buddy. But he just starts chugging it down his throat and then he barfs out some of it, which was very real.
So gross.
But he looked tore up. And I'm thinking to myself, you were way too upset about this. Like, what is upsetting you? And then I realized, did they just kill everybody? I mean, did they kill all of the workers and all of the people just so like the saviors could get out because the walkers had overtaken all of that area? And so they just unloaded all their ammo on all the living and all the walking dead. Like, I did mass murder just happen and nobody cares?
Yeah, I didn't pick up on that, but you could be right. And I don't know. The thing is, Negan, you know, this is something that I didn't even realize until a couple episodes back, how much he values people, you know, as a resource. So I don't know if that would be something he would back. That
does he value people more than he values his own life?
Probably not.
So if there's a chance that he could get out alive by mowing down everybody that's caught downstairs because of the influx of walkers.
It's possible.
Eugene was too upset.
I agree. It seemed like something really, because he seemed okay with choosing to be Negan, like fully be completely out for himself and doing whatever it takes to survive and be full Negan and go there. And you're right. It seemed like something really drove him over, and we hear gunshots, but what was actually happening? I don't know either. I don't know that was really made that clear. It seemed like then he was really struggling with what was happening. And I see both sides. It's hard to think that Negan would sacrifice all of those people. He didn't build that place overnight. Right. It took time to get those people and those resources and to build this, or build what he saw as like this well-oiled machine of, you know, this, what they call the sanctuary. And he's pretty comfortable with that. And, but again, Kristen, you make a really good point as well, that I also see that, you know, if it comes to it, when it hits the fan, is he going to sacrifice someone just so he can? Because he said he was going, he, you know, other people might die, but not me.
Right. Well, and when Rick was looking at the sanctuary, that place looked deserted.
Right.
It did. So
there weren't even like any walkers milling about except for the few that we saw mentioned on that sniper.
Yeah.
At least from the outside.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know.
Maybe I have a possible explanation. Maybe he realizes that when they get out, that they're going to go after Rick and, you know, the group at Alexandria, and that, you know, many of his friends are probably going to be killed. Certainly Rick going to be killed. And maybe that's what, you know, caused them to drink. Just that, you know, he was trying to save everybody in a way, but, you know, him kind of taking a stand meant that he was essentially, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? That he was condemning the, many of his friends to death, you know, so.
Mm-hmm. Former traveling companions.
Oh God, yes, former traveling companions. I wanted to punch him in the face every time he said that. Ugh.
I think he's just trying to make himself feel better and disassociate himself.
Yeah.
Rationalization, you know, by not calling them friends but traveling companions. I think that's what it was.
Anyways, that's my biggest question from the episode.
Very, very good question.
Yeah.
Hopefully, we get an answer.
Yeah.
I hope so too.
I just have a couple little things left. I noticed that Eugene referred to Dwight as the fifth columner, which is something I recognize back from, did you ever watch V?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Cause they called the resistance there the fifth column. And that, goes back to the Spanish Civil War and specifically the Siege of Madrid. And I guess the general that was leading the siege had like four columns of troops that were heading into the city, and he called the quote-unquote fifth column the citizens that were in the city that were kind of like actively trying to, you know, throw to sabotage the efforts of the government there. So I thought that was kind of interesting. I had to go look up to see the history of that. I liked that we saw Sasha in a flashback, even though that wasn't, you know, the actual angle that Eugene saw when that happened, because that was, of course, the angle that Negan saw. But I still liked that we saw her in a flashback, and also, you know, that Rosita mentioned her, because, you know, like we talk so much about Glenn and Abraham, but, you know, certainly Sasha and, you know, the things that are going on now needs to be recognized as well. So,
Well, that was a game changer too, what Sasha did. And I think there was the mention from Rosita. There was the flashback whenever Eugene goes to the casket that she was in with the old iPod. And when we get that flashback, so definitely, I'm glad that they're bringing it back to our attention, because you're right. It deserves attention that her sacrifice meant something. And it was, I think, a game changer. It certainly changed things.
It made everything possible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, the last point, and I'm going to stop with a question for after this, but, I got a kick out of the fact that even Chris Hardwick, mentioned that Jadis is frustrating. Like he said good things about Pollyanna McIntosh and how, you know, she's wonderful. And I've heard nothing but wonderful things, about her, but that's a character of Jadis is frustrating, which is probably not a great thing to say about a character, but it's so darn true.
So true.
Yeah. She is very frustrating. The whole trash people are frustrating, and I've talked
I didn't
so much
like her in Rick's boots.
No. Were you surprised that she ended up going along with Rick's offer?
Oh, yeah. No, it was either that or die.
Yeah, I wasn't surprised.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. Yeah, she saw how the wind was going to blow if she didn't agree to what he was saying. And I think you could tell he was not messing around and he meant what he said. I think she caught a whiff of that big time.
Yeah.
Rick also does his own fighting. Negan will kill somebody every once in a while, but he, for the most part, is kind of like Charles Manson. He gives he tells everybody to do it. Yeah. Rick does it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, he leads by his actions, not by his suggestions. Yeah. Okay, so the one question I wanted to lead with, and we talked about this earlier, which you'll probably hear in the previous episode, now that we kind of are splitting this into two. So they've told us that this big thing is going to happen at the end of the episode. What do you think it's going to be, Kristen? Or do you, should I give it to Rima first? Oh, you don't know? Ooh, we have crickets.
You know what? They'll probably kill somebody. Mm-hmm. I just, talking to an AMC going, you're not going to want to miss this. This is truly shocking. I'm like, well, now it's not going to be shocking.
Right.
Yeah.
One of our friends in the, in our Zedhead group, Jamie Dimmick, she said the same thing. She goes, why they do that? Now it's not going to be shocking.
Yeah,
exactly.
And I totally agree.
Yeah.
And I mean, whatever happens, even if Rick dies, it's going to be like, you guys ruined it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what I brought up in the weak sauce, that it was a stunt for them to do that. They were just trying to make sure that everybody watched. And that really, I'm really disappointed in that the story itself should be the thing that is getting people to watch.
Compelling
not,
enough.
You know, not trying to, you know, dangle a carrot, you know, oh, this is going to be a big thing. Oh, you're going to want to watch. You're going to be want a part of it. You know?
I feel like they set themselves up for failure when they do that.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, exactly.
Because then you expect so much because you're like, oh my gosh, which I've kind of learned throughout with this show and other shows that I try not to let that build me up like, oh, well, AMC tells me to be surprised and I don't want to miss. So, you know, I don't necessarily allow myself to go there. But, you know, I understand when people do, like they do get all excited about that. And maybe, you know, people who don't watch previews and I don't do spoilers or anything, but I do watch previews. I do watch the little sneak peeks after The Talking Dead. They get that little peek, you know, into a scene in the next one. So I watch little snippets here and there. So maybe some call that spoilers. So I watch that much, but so I don't know what's going to happen, and I'm not sure if I can guess. My guess is, yes, someone's going to die. Have we even had, and I'm just trying to think because my memory is really shot for this season, we haven't really had a big death? Who died so far?
This season?
Yeah, so far in this first half of the
Eric
season.
Eric and Shiva.
So, yeah, oh, God. How can I
know. See, I didn't want to say it.
See, I'm in denial. I can't even, I can't come to terms with it, and I still haven't come to terms. So to me, Shiva was a huge, huge loss. So yeah, Shiva, we lost, and Eric, who may not have been a major character, but Phil Aaron is a major character, and that certainly affected him. And I really loved, you know, Eric on the show. So yeah, you're right. So I think it's probably going to be a major character. Something is probably big going to happen. But I'm just not, I just feel like they're dealing with that like they are with the whole crossover news. I don't.
Well, it's also. I think it's
played it out.
I think it's AMC. Yeah. You know, look at what they do with Into the Badlands. You know,
oh my God, shove it down your throat. Oh,
right.
And I mean, won't watch that show probably, just because of that.
A lot of people feel that way. You know, so I think AMC just they're ruining their own network with the gimmicks and the stunts that they pull. So.
Well, and I'm really starting to wonder now about budgets too, because I've heard them even say on this, on Talking Dead a couple of times, this season, how the, you know, they have to get them shot in 8 days and all that stuff. And I think to myself, you know, we all, of course, watch Game of Thrones, and I don't know what kind of budget Stranger Things has, but it's got to probably be more than Walking Dead at this point, I would think. And it's just like, you know, Star Trek Discovery, same kind of thing. The budgets have to be more than what they're doing with Walking Dead. And what makes it worse is that they're so rushed, and you start to see stupid things happen, like the deer from last season. And, you know, some people had problems with the RPG.
Last week with the RPG. Yeah. That was horrible.
I loved it.
I loved it too. It wasn't realistic, but I loved it anyway.
Why wasn't it realistic? So when you get blown up, you turn into pink mist. You turn into nothing.
Yeah, well, that's from Grey's Anatomy, so I recognize that, and I applaud that. It's the pink mist. And I totally agree with that to a point. The only part where I disagree with that, now I applaud Rosita. It's like, I think I mentioned this in the group, that if someone called me baby girl, I'd blow that dude up too in a heartbeat. Absolutely. That's it. Game over.
Yeah.
The problem I have with that is we saw Daryl blow up when we first got a peek at the saviors, at this group. Remember the dudes on the motorcycles
right.
that stopped them as a roadblock, and were, you know, it's like, well, which I won't say what they said, but your stuff's our stuff. Daryl blew them up with look like an RPG grenade launcher, something of that nature. And we had body parts. We had, to me, it looked as realistic as what they could make it to be, where they blew them up and we had legs and arms and blood and guts and things that were on, and then blown up on fire motorcycles. Mm. This guy just completely evaporated. And I feel that was slightly inconsistent. Like, yeah, you're probably going to be a lot of pink mist, but I feel like we should have had a couple fingers or a foot somewhere that wasn't maybe quite in the range of that explosion. And
that's a good point.
You know, give me some blood and guts. Don't give me just, it disappears like the guy blinked out of the scene like Genie.
Yeah.
It would have been cool if Rosita would have been sprayed in blood.
Yeah. Yes.
See, like when Meredith got the blowback, she was covered in that dude's blood.
I love you. Missed, but... I love everything about you right now.
Yeah.
We're talking about Grey's Anatomy and Walking Dead in the same sentence.
Yeah. I'm doing a Grey's Anatomy rewatch, so that episode's fresh in my memory.
I just did too.
You guys are like separated at birth.
I just finished, I'm in the ferry boat accident episode arc right now.
You're a little bit ahead of me. I am just starting with season 3 right after, spoiler alert, Denny died.
Worst. If I ever meet Jeffrey Dean Morgan, I want to come and dress up in Izzy's pink dress.
That would be beautiful. Oh, please do. I want to be there.
Just because I'm sure he gets a lot of bats and crazy people. And I just want to show up and be like, I'm Izzy. Yay.
I did ask him at one of the Walker Stalker cons. I asked him who was a better kisser, Norman Reedus or Katherine Heigl. He said Norman.
He's probably like, we do not talk about Katherine Heigl.
Right. She who shall not be named.
Yeah. She's Voldemort.
Oh boy.
Sorry, Brian.
No,
sorry, tangent.
We went off there.
That's okay. As I said, this estrogen injected episode is brought to you by I don't know what. You can give it a thing. But anyway, I think we're about to wrap up this monster marathon that we recorded. We meant to record one episode and we've recorded two.
But when you have talkers on your podcast, this is what happens. Cause me and Kristen like to talk.
But the thing is, I wasn't going to stop you because it wasn't crappy. It was gold. So, you know, I didn't have to talk as much as I normally talk on an episode, but that's okay too. So anyway, I've said it before. I love you two very much. And
back at you.
Yeah. And it was really fun to do this episode with you. And of course, anytime either of you would like to come back, you have an open invitation.
Thank you. This Thanks. Was fun. Thank yeah. you very much fun. For
yeah.
yeah, setting this up. This was great.
Yeah.
Yep. A lot of fun.
All right. Well, just saying the usual stuff to submit your feedback for next week's episode, the mid-season finale, few ways to do it. Go to goldenspowermedia.com/feedback where you can submit text or audio, use the SpeakPipe widget. You can call the voicemail line for GSM, which is 304-837-2278. You can use our email, which is at walking, not at, you can use our email, which is walkingdeadgsm@gmail.com, or like most people, you can submit feedback on the designated episode thread in our Facebook group, which is at facebook.com/groups/walkingdeadgsm. And like I did the last time, if you aren't a member, Eugene, who was such a big thing about this episode, would say,
"Are you serious?"
Of course, Enid would also say,
"Are you serious?
Seriously?
Seriously? Oh!"
I knew you were doing that.
I was trying to beat you to it.
All right. So the feedback deadline for this mid-season finale is Tuesday, the 12th of December at 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Central. So get your feedback in before then, and you will be featured. You can also reach us on Twitter, which is at Walking Dead GSM. You can support us by giving by subscribing in whatever podcast client that you use. Of course, rating or reviewing us and or reviewing us in Apple Podcasts is very important. So go to goldenspiralmedia.com/apple. And other ways to support the network are at goldenspiralmedia.com/support. The next episode is season 8, episode 8, titled How It's Gotta Be, which is written and directed by some person that we don't know. Also,
I think it's going to be.
Is it not Nicotero?
Is it? I don't know.
I thought I heard an announcement some time ago. I think that it was going to be Nicotero.
Oh, good.
But like I said, I think that's just something I read. Don't hold me to it, but I think so. He typically does the premieres and the finales, like, so it's some big shocker. But, you know, you just never know what they're going to do. But I'm pretty sure I heard that it was going to be him, if somebody's looking that up to verify.
What I was looking up to verify to see if they had changed the episode description, but they haven't. It is a very short thing, but it says every story and battle from the first half of the season comes together.
Wow. They're going to land the plane.
Yep, they're going to land the plane. So scheduled guest hosts for next week are Ben from the DC Primetime podcast, who was on the Ben Beck from the DC Primetime podcast, nice. Who was part of the season premiere, and from the season finale of Fear, Laura Willie Swink, who was,
hey, Laura.
Yeah, who's a friend of love ours, her. and she is also helping out the podcast with the show notes as well. So, I will say it again. It has been an absolute delight doing this with you. I knew it would be, and I think it's turned out being 100 times even better than what I thought it would be. So, thank you, Rima. Thank you, Kristen. You know, I love you guys dearly, and, so happy to do this with you. And, so,
thank you. I had fun. Thank you for setting it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me on. I had a great time. I can, you know, good or bad, I always love talking about this show. So any opportunity presented, I'm all for it. So thanks for having me. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun. All right. Well, with that, good night. And this is the Walking Dead Talk Through. I'm Brian.
I'm Rima.
And I'm Kristen.
And I totally screwed up how I normally say that, but good night.
Good night.
Good night, moon. That felt like we were doing it.